You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
That's right. It's another Thursday night. It's time for Last Word Soccer Club Radio. My name is Matt Pollard, joined
Welcome
now by my co-host Alec Rivera. How are you doing tonight, Alec?
I'm doing amazing. I had a great
Drew
day.
Epperly.
That's absolutely wonderful. We're joined now Excuse me. I'm sorry, everyone. We're having some technical difficulties. We're joined now by Chris Kamrani of the Salt Lake Tribune to talk a little bit RSL. How are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thank you. First of all, thank you for joining us, Chris. RSL is now still the only MLS team that is still undefeated. Lots of positive results, including against three teams that were in the playoffs last year. What are your thoughts on the season so far, and is it time for fans to start drinking the Claret and Cobalt Kool-Aid yet?
I think it's still a little too early, to be honest with you. I think the start is great, but I think people also have to remember that they got off on a pretty good start last year as well, before things tailed off pretty significantly. My thoughts on the season, I think what they were able to achieve this offseason where they were able to find players who fit this system, and I think a year ago they were trying to pull and plug guys that don't really fit this formation and this style of play. And I think, as everyone knows, missing Joao Plata for the first 4 months of the year after he broke his foot in 2015 really prolonged the adjustment period to this new formation. And we're seeing this year what he's able to do now, with a full preseason under his belt, 4 goals and 3 assists in 5 games, I think, and then an extra goal in there from the Champions League series against Tigres. So I think his abilities in this formation has really kind of changed the paradigm in terms of what RSL is able to do in this new look.
One of the main storylines this season so far for RSL has been the play of Joao Plata, like you mentioned before. So some would say if he was healthy all of last year, like you just mentioned, they make the playoffs. What about him is so effective, and why has he's been so effective this year? And do you think he may possibly be an MLS All-Star or MVP favorite?
I think it's early. I think if he can keep on this trajectory, he's definitely an All-Star candidate for sure. MVP's tough because as the season wears on, I think you're going to see, if you're an RSL fan or a follower of RSL, you're going to see probably more Javier Morales. And I think if there's any player on RSL who can maybe steal a little bit of thunder from Plata, it's Javier, who's been, the best player on this team for the last few years. In terms of what's working for Joao this year, I think his skill set just really fits the system, and I think the underrated moves of bringing in Yuram Avcisian really has helped him. Yura can occupy two center backs, and then you're leaving Joao out wide to take on a player one on one. I think that suits his skill set pretty well. Not to mention having Burrito Martinez, a player of that caliber, on the other side. So I think if you look at that front three and how well they work together, how well they interchange, how fluid they've been, I think Joao is benefiting playing alongside those kind of quality strikers as much as his success has shown through the first few weeks.
And how much of RSL success do you think is dependent on Plata keeping up his form?
Yeah, no, that's a great observation. I think it's pretty crucial in terms of, he's leading the league in goals right now, and I think Yura has one goal. Burrito doesn't have a goal. I think there's going to come a point when, teams are maybe going to start changing their tactical approach, and I think you could see teams maybe doubling up on Joao more often, getting a little more physical with him. So in terms of, how much RSL can ride this streak of success, I don't know. I think this game on Saturday, is going to be a tough one for RSL. Vancouver always plays RSL really tough, and they've come to Rio Tinto and got a couple of results the last few years as well.
Excellent stuff there, Chris. One of the question marks for RSL going into the season may have been the defense. Jaimison Olave, who returned to the club, isn't a spring chicken. Chris Schuler still can't get any minutes, which might surprise some from the outside, yet I think it's time to give them credit. Justin Glad and Aaron Mond have gotten the job done when it's counted the most. How do you think of their play so far as a partnership, and do you think at some point this season the team's going to need to make a move at center back?
I think the team will make a move at center back. GM Craig Weibels really hasn't made any bones about that. And I think, you know, what they want to do is they just want to fortify that position. Going back to what you're saying is, you know, Olave's years are dwindling. He's still a capable center back, but I don't know if he's going to be a starter on a playoff caliber team at this point. I agree with what you said about Aaron and Justin. Their partnership has proven to be pretty successful. It's been short-lived. I mean, they've only started together, I think, two or three times this year. But looking at a guy like Aaron Mond, I think it can't really go any more understated of what he's been able to do stepping into the spotlight going back to last year when they were just beaten with injuries. That back line was so, you know, brutally ravaged with injuries, with Chris Schuler playing only five games last year and Olave being hurt. Mond really stepped in the middle of the summer and really never relinquished his spot. And he's started, you know, every game this year, even going back to the Champions League series, and he's done very well. And I think that bodes well for RSL. You know, Aaron is more of a physical type center back, and you can pair him with Justin, who's a young kid, but, you know, Craig Weibel likes to use the term cerebral. He's a smart kid. He reads the game well. And I think, you know, when you're just, you know, 18, 19 years old, you're still growing a little bit. So I think Justin's still getting used to the physicality of the league, but, you know, to go to Kansas City and start in that win, and I know, you know, they didn't look great against Colorado, but to get another game under his belt in that win as well, I think you look at Aaron and Justin going forward, it could be a pretty good partnership. Now, you know, with how young they are, I should look this up, but they're probably the youngest center back pairing in the league. You know, they might have a few shockers every once in a while, but I think what they've been able to do the first few weeks of the season bodes well going into the rest of the year.
Now, do you think there's maybe, with having, you know, obviously one of the best holding midfielders in front of them in Kyle Beckerman, and then obviously one of the better veteran goalkeepers behind them in Nick Raimondo, has that helped sort of stave off the learning curve so far?
Yeah, I think so. I think Nick especially has, you know, kind of not necessarily taken those guys under his wing, but has really wanted to, you know, get the taste of 2015 out of his mouth, and I think everyone along that back line wants to do the same. And talking to Nick this preseason, you know, the first thing that he told me was, you know, we were so good for so long because our defense was so good. Now, you know, they had so many impressive attacking players, but when RSL was at its best, they were one of the stingiest back lines in the league. And I think what we saw last year was, you know, a formation change, so many injuries at such key spots. I think, you know, Nick and Kyle kind of obviously took it upon themselves to, you know, address that, even though they don't necessarily play that position. They, you know, like you said, they kind of book in that back line. But I think the addition of Sonny, you know, their new Nigerian midfielder, has been a tremendous bright spot early on. I think he's, you know, one of the underrated moves of the offseason in MLS. He's really come in and adjusted very well. You know, he landed in Tucson in preseason, and then 2 weeks later, he's starting in the, you know, the Champions League quarterfinal series against Tigres. And I think his ability playing next to Kyle, slowing the game down, but also being able to help, you know, break up play and, you know, recycle possession has been pretty impressive.
Absolutely. You mentioned a few of the more veteran players for RSL. Kyle Beckerman is 33, Javi O is 36, and Raimondo is 36 himself. So what are your expectations for the old guard this season, and which of the young players does Jessica Saar need to step up this year?
I mean, I think those guys just have expectations for themselves, right? I think, you know, Kyle and Nick are staples in this league, and they're, you know, benchmarks for that club. And Javi, the same thing. Javi turned the clocks back the last 3 years, and he was playing better than he's ever played statistically the last couple of years. But I think, you know, Javi's one of the most fouled guys in the league, and we saw in the opener when he got leveled and suffered a fractured rib, these things take time, and he's not playing the amount of minutes that he wants or RSL fans want to see him play. So I think once he can get back to full fitness, once he can overcome that rib fracture, I think you could see be a little more influential in the midfield. In terms of the young guys, I think Justin's part of that. A lot of people are high on Jordan Allen. I think what a question facing Jordan is, what position is he going to play, and what position is he going to go after and try to supplant somebody? He can play so many different positions, but I think even if you asked him, you probably want to just find one spot and go after it and try to stick with it. But I think right now he's kind of their versatile guy that they can plug in wherever they need to on a weekly basis, whether that's outside back or the central midfield or even out wide in the 4-3-3.
Excellent stuff, Chris. One last question before we let you get out of here. It wouldn't be a Last Word SC interview without asking for a prediction. So I know we're totally asking you to throw, a dart at a dart board, after we put you in the middle of a lake and then blindfold you and spin you around and then probably then some. Where does RSL finish in the standings, and do you think they make the playoffs?
Oh, man, it's so early. I as you guys know, the season is insanely long. And things can go haywire. If you lose a 2 or 3 starters in this league, it's tough for any team to rebound. And I think, like I said, last year they started off great and things tailed off pretty strongly. I think this year is very different. I think the pieces that they added in the offseason and the moves that they made and the year two in this formation, they've adjusted, quite considerably. I think they're going to be there. If they can stay healthy, I think they will have a shot at the playoffs. And if they can stay healthy, I think, once you get into the playoffs, as we saw with Portland last year, you never know. So I think when it comes to, contending for playoff spot, especially out west, you just got to be in striking distance, come September. Because if you can, rattle off 3 or 4 wins over the last month and a half of the season, you probably get in. And then from there, it's anyone's ballgame. I mean, we're already seeing, Colorado, the worst team in the West last year, go to Kansas City and win. And I think Kansas City now already has as many home losses this year as they did all of 2015. So I think, the West is much, in my opinion, much better than the Eastern Conference. And I think it's a dogfight. So I'm in terms of RSL being in contention for the playoffs in, September, October, I think if they can stay healthy, I think they'll be there.
Excellent stuff. Listeners, you can follow Chris Kamrani on Twitter at Chris Kamrani and check out his columns at sltrib.com/sports/RSL. Chris, we're going to give you the last word on this. Any shameless plugs?
No, man. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining us. Listeners, we're going to go straight to a pre-recorded interview that Alec had with Drew Epperle, the managing editor of Big D Soccer, to talk a little bit FC Dallas. We'll be right back for the roundtable after that.
The SB Nation blog. We're going to be talking about everything FC Dallas. How are you doing tonight, Drew?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing pretty well ourselves. I think that we might as well just jump on in there after that impressive 3-1 win at Portland last night. Any thoughts that you want to share with us before we really get started?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the win that the team needed after 2 straight draws at home. The offense finally looked like they were clicking again, and the defense, they played very well, pretty stout, after giving up some early goals the last couple games.
Tyler?
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that was all you had to say. But, I mean, look, you would know better than most that it wouldn't be a start to the MLS season if we weren't talking about Mauro Diaz in some capacity, whether it be an injury or anything else. But thoughts on his play so far this season? I mean, he's been with the team a few years now, and this is really his midfield. So what have you thought about the beginning of the season for Mauro Diaz?
Yeah, the first couple games that he was out there, he played pretty typical Mauro Diaz style play. At times you really thought, okay, this guy is in true midseason form with the way he started out the season with, I believe, 4 assists in, I think, 3 or 4 games. And he was playing on the different level that he is known to play on. But then again, it seems like every after every few good games that he has, he'll pick up something, whether it's a thigh injury or a hamstring injury. And that's kind of what we're dealing with right now with him. He, a couple weeks ago on a Friday afternoon session, he had a little tightness in his leg, and the team just decided to hold him out for a game. And he was very close to going in the game, I believe that was against Columbus 2 weeks ago, and they just couldn't get him in. He had a pregame workout session that just couldn't get him cleared to play that night, and then they've been working with him on the side ever since. And I think obviously last night was a smart move to keep him out of playing on that turf in Portland. You never want to put a guy that's not 100% out back on turf, especially in a tough physical game that you would have against Portland. So, you know, when he's out there, he's great, but Dallas fans, they're kind of frustratingly used to this with Diaz, where they have to just kind of sit and wait.
Yeah, and that frustration is definitely warranted, but, you know, even so, from a fan standpoint, and maybe Oscar Pereira's standpoint as well, you'd almost rather have him for those four games at a time and then sit him out one or two if that's necessary, just because of the magic that he is capable of producing on the field. So I could definitely understand that frustration on both sides. But what about you? Do you think that kind of thing is worth it, if that's going to be what it takes to keep him on the field long term?
You know, it's such a long season. You got 34 games. You got potential 4 or 5 in the Open Cup, depending on how far you go. Dallas now has the Champions League this year to deal with, so that's another small set of games. I think that's, you know, 4 or 5 there. And, you know, that adds up. Throwing the playoffs as well in the fall, and you're looking at potentially, you know, I'm not great at math, I think that's around 50 games or so. That's a lot of work for a guy he's not that big physically, so he kind of does need, from time to time, these little short breaks. And, you know, they did it last year, and for the most part, it worked out pretty well in their favor in the end. I mean, I think we kept saying at the end of the season, you know, if we'd had him maybe for one more game during the regular season, the supporter shield would have been in Dallas's hands. But, you know, right now, they're finding ways to do things without him, and that is kind of what they need to do anyway. So the games that he actually is out with a legitimate injury that could be serious, they know how to play without him. And, you know, I think it's just, it is what it is with him. I hate saying it like that, but to me, it's either damned if you do, damned if you don't. And, you know, I'd rather protect him for the long haul than risk him too many times, especially on turf like last night.
I think a lot of fans would agree with you.
If you're, let's just compare this old guard and new guard, I guess, for FC Dallas. Let's say hypothetically you're playing a 4x4 pickup game, and you got first choice. Who do you pick first, Mauro Diaz or Fabian Castillo?
Oh, I had a feeling you'd go there. you know, to me, I lean more towards, you know, if they're healthy at the same time, you got to go with Diaz. But if there's some kind of injury concern, I do lean a little closer to what Castillo can bring, just because he has that one-on-one ability that is so electric to watch.
Yeah, I mean, he really is something else. That's the bottom line. And not only that, you know, FC Dallas is a team with a lot of depth. They've really invested in their young guys. They've brought in a lot of good parts from South America as well as around MLS as well. And now they managed to pick up from Portland, actually, Maxi Urruti to be that big number nine that they didn't have last year, and that a lot of people were saying that if they had that number nine like Maxi Urruti, they would have maybe won the Shield and gotten past and into the finals last year. We keep talking about Portland. It's a recurring theme here. But is Maxi Urruti the piece that this FC Dallas team needs to finally win that big trophy, that MLS Cup?
I think so far he's helped to be that guy. There was a lot of questions when they brought him in the offseason whether or not he was the type of player that could be a number nine for this team. But I think after 7 games, he's more than proven himself enough, especially last night in that 4-4-2 with Tetrak and Deli. They worked very well side by side, and he caused basically 2 of the 3 goals to happen with his defense, which Dallas wasn't getting a ton of last year out of their attack. I mean, they had good pressure up front and guys like Blas Perez, but it was never that kind of level that Urruti brought last night, and it's paying off dividends. I mean, I really do believe they're going to score a lot of goals because of that, and just because of the connection that Rudy and Diaz have off the field. Those guys are like BFF off the field. And I really believe once that connection hits the field this season, they're going to score a ton of goals.
Yeah, that's huge. And I mean, not only that, he brings them a dynamic that they haven't had in a while, even with Blas Perez. He wasn't quite as physical and capable as Maxi Rudy is, mostly because he's just not as young, and that's a huge part of it. But would you agree that he allows everyone to play their positions better just because they're not trying to fill that gap at number nine anymore?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, what Rudy does so well, and I think last night was a great example of it, he baits defenders into mistakes. He gives them that false sense of security that they have time, that they have space, and then he just pounces on them. And Dallas didn't have that, like you said, in the years past, where they had a forward that was causing havoc up front and allowing players on the wing to be themselves and guys in the middle to be themselves. He really does set up the entire attack, and you know it's going to be fun to watch once it really unfolds itself. I think last night was a good example of how effective it can be.
Oh, absolutely. And along that same vein of the difference last year may have been, you know, Maxi or Rudy if he had been on Dallas's team last season. Do you think that this might be the year with Maxi or Rudy that Oscar Pareja is finally able to win Coach of the Year?
I would hope so. I mean, seven games in, they only have one loss, and yeah, it was a pretty terrible loss, you know, in Houston in week two, but, you know, they're already almost halfway to their win total on the road from last season. Last year, they only won five games away from Toyota Stadium. This year, they've already won two, and we're only, you know, 7 weeks into the season, which to me is a pretty remarkable feat on a young team, that he's able to make that kind of mark and make those adjustments that you kind of have to through the course of the season. You look at the calendar this week alone, you know, Dallas played last Saturday, they played last night, and now they have to play on Sunday, so Osprey's got a lot of player management and game management ahead of him, and so far he's done very remarkable with what he's got in front of him.
I actually even thought he might have deserved it last year, to be honest, but that's an aside, and we'll leave that for another time. Tyler, you had a question on the center back competition.
Of course, yeah. I mean, look, we talk about all this firepower FC Dallas either has been stocking up or suddenly has during this past season, but you know what they say, offense wins games, but defense wins championships, and you know what, that's something that FC Dallas is really getting to prove they can play over a long season. So right now, who's the better partner for Matt Hedges? Is it Walker Zimmerman or is it Zach Lloyd? And what do they really bring to the table as far as pros and cons?
You know, that debate we've been having here in Dallas the last, I guess, probably 6 months, really. I mean, to me, it really does come down to who Dallas plays. Because there's times where you need a bigger presence in the middle alongside Hedges like Zimmerman, and is not a very good team on set piece defending, like we saw where they gave up a goal pretty early on a corner kick, and that was a lot of it because there wasn't enough height in the middle of the box to contend with a good cross that came in the box. So for me, it really is game by game. If I had to pick, though, I think a little more towards the veteran and Zach Lloyd. The guy he does have a different kind of calming sense on him on when it comes to time on the ball and his passing out of the back. Zimmerman's, he's still young. I mean, the guy, I believe he's only 23. He's got a long way to go in his career. And, I think he'll get there. But right now, when it comes to just pure technical ability, I think Lloyd's just a little bit ahead of him in that regard. But, you know, really, it's at the end of the day, like I said, I do believe it comes down to who Dallas is playing on a week-to-week basis. It's a little bit drawn out, but that's kind of how I see it with the center backs here right now.
Yeah, that creates an interesting dynamic, though, because over a season like this, when you have a bunch of different competitions, you're going to have to be rotating the squad a lot, and that's going to have, you know, obviously effects on who's playing where at any given time. But you'd like a certain sense of stability along the back line throughout at least the regular season into the playoffs. So if you had to make a choice between these two, about which one is going to cement themselves as that other starter throughout the year, who would you say it would be?
You know, I would I would actually, as weird as it sounds after saying I'd like Lloyd to play a little bit more than Zimmerman, I still lean a little more towards Zimmerman for the long haul for the season, mainly because Zach can actually slide over to a fullback role that he was naturally brought in into the team to be. Which again comes back to the depth. Dallas has just a slew of players that can play in multiple spots. I still think at times Lloyd would be better off at the wing, but you know, Dallas has shown, they've shown very well to put him in the middle and get things done. But yeah, it's such a long season, so rotating is definitely key for this squad. But I do agree that the consistency factor is huge with the back line. And, you know, the last few weeks they've been leaking goals early, possibly because of the lack of consistency in the back.
That's definitely a good point. What are your thoughts on the long-term development potential, because as we talked about with Walker Zimmerman just now, for Jesse Gonzalez and Kellen Acosta?
Yeah, you know, to break them out separately, Jesse's long-term is, actually for both players, the sky's really the limit for each guy. Jesse, in particular, one of the biggest things he's got to continue to work on is the communication. We saw that in the Houston game in particular, where there was just not a lot of talk between him and his back four, and it the team paid for it, quite honest. I mean, giving up five goals the way they did. I mean, he's got a lot of work in that department, and it's just a lot of maturity, too. I mean, the kid's 20 years old. He still has a lot of soccer in front of him, and, you know, young keepers, they take time. I mean, he's not going to be playing in the World Cup on the senior level overnight, and I do believe at some point he will be there for Mexico or the U.S. I mean, I still don't know which way he's leaning. I think he's going to Mexico, but that's another story for another day. But I still think he's got to just work on being mature and growing up as a person before he really will hit that superstar level. Kellen, on the other hand, you know, there are some maturity factors with him as well, because he's still fairly young himself, but he's got such great technical ability and such a great ceiling in front of him that I believe he'll bust through that ceiling and go to the next level at some point. He has a way about him and a knowledge about him on the field that is so intriguing to watch. You know, he'll make mistakes like any young player, but I do believe he could be a guy that we're going to be talking about for a long time on the national level. And maybe, you know, I don't know if he'll stay in Dallas for his whole career. I kind of, you know, personally for him, I hope he doesn't, because I want to see him succeed, you know, on the bigger stage. And I really do think he's got so much in front of him, and it's just going to be fascinating to watch.
Well, Kellen Acosta is definitely somebody who's rated highly by a lot of important people. We've already seen him. He's made the breakthrough with the senior national team. Obviously, he was with the U-23s for those Olympic qualifiers that didn't quite pan out as we would have liked them to. But he's just one example of the pieces, you know, really being in place now for this team to make a huge run. And you could argue they were in place last year, but maybe they lacked just the final little bit of maturity that comes along with, you know, just being a young team. And, you know, now they have Oscar Pareja with that core group for another year. So, you know, if there is ever a year for this team, this is going to be it. So what do they have to do to capitalize on all their momentum and win MLS Cup this season? What do you think? Do they get it done?
I still think they have a heck of a shot this season. I can't remember. It's been a couple of months since I did season-long predictions, but I still believe that it always comes down to one big thing with this club, and that's injuries. If they stay healthy for the long haul, this is the team that will do it. And they will, if not win the Supporters Shield, they'll contend for it just like they did last year. And I do think they have what it takes, based on the experience they've had the last two seasons in the playoffs, to go all the way. We saw it last year where they built on what they did the year before, and they came really close. It's one or two things, like we always say. It's always one or two bounces that just have to go their way. I do think this is a year that those bounces will go their way.
Well, you know, they were really agonizingly close, but I think they were the consensus last word SC Radio pick to win the cup this year. Isn't that right, Alec?
Yeah, I picked them. I still pick them. And with that, thank you so much for joining us, Dan. We can't wait to see what FC Dallas does next week. This has been a Last Word Soccer Club interview, and we will be back with you with another segment shortly.
Welcome back, listeners, to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. My name is Matt Pollard, only here, lastwordonsports.com. Joined once again for the roundtable by my co-host and trusty steed, Alec Rivera. How you doing, Alec?
You make me sound like Donkey from Shrek.
Okay, my trusty, I don't want to call you a sidekick because that demeans you. My trusty partner in crime, how about that?
But steed doesn't, wait a second, never mind, keep going, but that's really funny.
Okay, so in any case, so as longtime listeners in the show will know from this season, this is normally in the roundtable where we start Alex's weekly hashtag MLS fantasy question. As those of you who are a big fantasy, big MLS fantasy buffs will know, we actually had a bunch of DGWs this week, and then so there were games last night, Wednesday night. We're recording Thursday evening, so our rosters have already locked, so there's really not a whole lot that we can change about our lineups unless you wanted to do a managerial substitution. So what Alec and I are going to do, we're in round six, so we're a little over a month into the season. We're just going to do a brief rundown of our rosters, where they stand, what we like, what we don't like, talk about things, and have more of sort of a back and forth rather than Alec saying, oh God, Matt, please help me. So, Alec, what's the first thing you want to talk about, either with your roster or with my roster, upcoming DGWs, players you like, don't like, etc.?
Well, just off of my, like, very inexperienced and unknowledgeable, observation, I've noticed that I really like that I accidentally put Max Urruti in my lineup. And this week I accidentally captained him, and I'm not upset about it. He's actually doing great and has another game on the way.
Now, I wouldn't necessarily have captained Urruti, but I feel like Urruti's a really good player because I think he's a good value, because I think in a vacuum he's priced appropriately, but then when you account the team that he's on, you know, obviously if you have a striker, if you have an average striker on a good team, their stats are going to be better necessarily, some, or for the most part, are going to be better than, say, a good striker on an average team. You know, if, excluding the big name DPs, you know, Giovinco, etc. But a thing that I like about Urruti also is he's immediately got two assist men who are going to get him a whole bunch of, goals, a whole bunch of shot opportunities and scoring opportunities. So in that sense, I generally like him. As you may remember, Alec, from some of the previous shows that we've talked about, I tend to not, I either get like a bargain forward, or I get somebody, or I pay a whole bunch of money for a forward who I know every single week is going to show up. So obviously I have Giovinco, who you can start pretty much any week in MLS Fantasy. For the most part, you can captain pretty much any week in MLS Fantasy and get a decent return on that. The other two forwards I have are Mansari, as I'm sure you see from mine, and also Eric Walcott's, and to a certain extent John Bava's strategies. We tend to have at least at one or two positions the least expensive player at that position in the game, just as a dead roster spot, so we can spend that salary elsewhere. And then, you know, Kyrie Shelton is a bench option. And then obviously I have Quincy Ameriquois, who's been a decent production at around $7.5 million. What players do you have for the DGW this week, Alec?
I have Jesse Gonzalez, which is my, like, stupid idiot decision, for this week. I have Marco Papa, who is a pleasant surprise already this week. I wasn't expecting Colorado to do well against, Sporting Kansas City, but I was banking on them at home against New York. Maxi Urruti, and then Dom Dwyer, who I have tried several times in the past to get off my team, and I can't just bring myself to do it. And every time I'm rewarded for not taking him off my fantasy roster.
Well, I think, if I remember correctly, your fantasy team name last season was Dom, You Want Me?
Yes.
Okay, so I think for one thing that I tend to do, I don't completely rely on a player if I name them somebody, if I name that player, if I name my team after that player. Obviously, it's kind of cute and fun. So, I mean, I'm sure you remember a couple years ago, Perry's Kitchen Sink was a really popular MLS fantasy name with Perry Kitchen. I at one point had Are You Keening Me? Robbie Keane, obviously. So I can see where maybe there was a little bit of appeal from that. I feel like Dom Dwyer is sort of reinvented himself this season, you know, didn't have as much production in 2015. But again, I guess similar to Maxi Urruti, a very good, I'd say certainly an above average striker, but who is on a good team that is going to possess the ball and create chances. And he's the primary funnel through the offense, similar to how you have, you know, Benny Fellhaber, Brad Davis, and Graham Soucy, who will all be playmakers. But those guys are more passers. They're passing to a guy who's finishing, similar to how, you know, FC Dallas, yes, Fabian Castillo will take shots, but then you've got, you know, Mario Diaz, Barrios in the midfield who are looking to create chances. And so all of those chances funnel through Urruti. So in a similar sense, I think Dom's certainly a great pick. Obviously, Sporting Kansas City lost to Colorado Rapids last night, but they continue to be really good at home, and Dom Dwyer continues to score, so that's obviously a good option. On my end, I had Matt Hedges, who got 4 points for FC Dallas. They narrowly missed getting that clean sheet for me. I have Colo from Sporting Kansas City. Obviously, Sporting's defense has been ravaged with injuries, and he's been, I think, he's been the best defender, certainly the best value in MLS fantasy so far. I picked up Michael Azira a couple weeks ago because I needed a cheaper midfield option, and he's pretty good. He plays 90 minutes and he'll get a couple bonuses, but he won't do anything special. So he's a nice little reliable, you know, I just need to fill in that 11th roster spot and let me get somebody who I know is going to start and get me 2 or 3 points no matter what. It's better than nothing for, you know, 5.5 million. And then my captain this week is Diego Valeri. In hindsight, I had a sense, not necessarily that I had a sense that Nagby was getting injured. We'll talk about that Nigel De Jong tackle in a little bit here. But I just sensed that for the price and the amount of production, that Valeri has just been a little bit more valuable. I was also looking for a playmaker who maybe I could hold on to for a longer period of time. And, you know, with Nagby's potential to be gone for Copa America, you know, that would only make Valeri's importance to the Timbers more significant, as more balls would be going through him rather than him and Nagby having an off and on. And then not on a DGW, but I had Mario Diaz. I sat him on the bench for a week thinking, maybe he'll come back. And then we saw, you know, I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday of this week that he wasn't going to start. So I figured, let's get rid of him. Let me get a guy of comparable price, comparable production, who has DGWs coming up. Montreal has DGWs coming up. So, of course, Ignacio Piatti. And then up top at forward, as I previously mentioned, I've got Quincy Ameriquois. Looking at the schedule in the forward, Alec, as someone who is a bit more of a novice to MLS fantasy, what are you thinking? What's your strategy, and how can I help you modify or perfect it?
My strategy is put out all of the fires, to be quite honest.
Okay. So in that sense, I think you certainly want to manage risk. One thing that I immediately do, I will make transfers at varying levels evenly. So I think I make as many, maybe not as many of the top players. Like, I'm not transferring in and out the Giovincos, the Ignacio Piattis, the Valeris necessarily, but maybe just below. I think, you know, if I looked at my transfers for players from, say, just under 9 million all the way down to, say, 5.5 million, I think I make an equal number of transfers at those different price ranges. And it isn't necessarily that, you know, I'm getting rid of my better, more expensive players as much as I'm getting the worst ones. I'm just looking at where can I improve my roster the most significantly from week to week with the two transfers that I have. So where's my biggest weakness, or, you know, where am I not being as efficient? Is there an expensive guy who isn't producing who I can shed salary and then get a better value player? So I think certainly focus on where you have your weaknesses. I think first and foremost, that is players who are injured. I've been burned way too many times now. I just sort of have, you develop your own constitution and your own rules for MLS fantasy, Alec. And one of mine is, as soon as the guy's injured, I will almost immediately get rid of him. Like, I don't want to be anywhere near him. I don't want to risk that whatsoever, with very few exceptions. You know, if Giovinco is listed as questionable, I'll probably hang on to him, figuring maybe he could still pull through. I did the same thing with Mario Diaz. 2 weeks in a row, I said, nah, not going to happen. You will see on my roster that I do have Chance Myers on the bench. The only reason I have that is because I didn't want to have to spend three transfers this week, and I had a good enough roster, I thought, to play my starting 11. You know, maybe Myers comes back in a week or two. Worst case scenario, there's enough other players with DGWs who I could get in. So where do you think right now is your biggest weakness, either in your strategy or in your current roster, Alec?
So I just really don't know if I made good decisions. Like, I don't know if I made a good decision this week, because I used both my transfers. Both of them were to cover injuries. So, like I said, putting out fires. I let go of Sorrow from Columbus and brought on Breck Shea, because he was a similar price. Actually, I think he was a little bit cheaper, so that I could upgrade. I could upgrade at midfield while I was taking out Darlington Nagbe because of his injury, so I picked up Marco Papa.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good play. Certainly, you don't want ice every single week, especially when I have multiple transfers. I won't look at them individually in a vacuum. Sometimes I will, just for making that first one, to say, okay, you know, this is the transfer that I want to make. So let's look at that one, you know, with sort of the rough draft that MLS the transfer page allows you to do. And then it's, okay, what's the transfer that I need to make in order to get the one that I want? So in that sense, they're very much hand in hand. Some cases, if it's just, you know, a like for like switch, then I can look at the two of them completely separately of each other. But certainly when the salary cap, when formation, when your roster format comes into play, certainly you want to look at something like that. Anything else on MLS Fantasy we want to talk, Alec?
No, I think I'm good.
Okay, excellent stuff. Listeners, feel free to tweet at me, at LWS Matt Pollard on Twitter, or my good friend and arch nemesis in the Last Word SC Classic League, Eric Walcott, at Soccer with Eric. And then if you certainly want to get involved with stuff, feel free to tweet at Alec as well, at Alec_F_. That last underscore will get you.
Heckle me at Alec_F_.
There are plenty of other novices who will certainly need help. But as I previously mentioned, Darlington Nagbe is no longer available. Alec, as such, he is not on either of our MLS fantasy teams. And that is because he has a sprained ankle. Just from a quick Google search, I saw that could be a 4 to 6 week turnaround. I have no idea where Nagbe is in his injury per se. But that was due to a pretty nasty tackle by Nigel De Jong in the 72nd, 73rd minute, I believe, of the Super Soccer Sunday evening match between the LA Galaxy and Portland Timbers. Nagbe is subbed out soon after that. He is in a wheelchair, being carted off the field after the 1-1 draw between the two sides, and then exits the stadium towards the bus on crutches. We now find out all of the scans and whatever else that they did that I don't understand came up negative, so nothing's broken, fortunately, but he does have a sprain and he will miss some time. We've already heard that it is from Bruce Arena this week in training that is confirmed that Nigel De Jong at the very least will miss the Galaxy's game against the Houston Dynamo Friday, so tomorrow night. Potentially could miss more. What did you think of the tackle? What did you think of the Twitter hysteria mob that formed focusing in the Portland and Portlandia area, and how long do you think Nigel De Jong should and will be out?
Well, I'll start with the last question. I saw some stuff on Twitter, and I think I agree. Three games is probably a solid and not excessive punishment for what he did. I think that that tackle was obviously out of line. I think that he deserved a red card. And I think what annoys me about this whole Twitter outburst, I guess, is a lot of it is the same kind of people who say, oh, why are we giving so many red cards early this season? And then you see why, and they ask, where was the red card? But I think that's the only part that bothers me is, I guess, people who are kind of hypocritical about it. I think that, you know, the punishment, so to speak, fits the crime.
Mm-hmm. Really good point there. Something that I hadn't really considered. I kind of saw it from a different thing. First of all, to anyone out there in the Twitterverse who thinks that I'm about to be an LA Galaxy homer on this, I encourage you to go to my Twitter feed and scroll down. I do a pretty good job of commenting on events and then analysis during the game, so I usually have timestamps of what minute during the game things occur, so you can see very clearly where the Nigel Jeong tackle happens on my feed and where my reaction happens to it. My first immediate thought, Alec, was I wasn't really sure because I thought there were players were going down early really quickly, so I thought I want to see a replay before I judge anything. In that, I was not accusing Nagbe of diving. He did go down 10 minutes earlier, I think, and that was a foul, and I think rightfully a foul. As soon as I saw the replay, I immediately thought straight red card, absolutely no question. I think it was an egregious tackle. We can talk a little. I'll talk a little bit about intent in a second, but I think if nothing else, it was reckless. And poorly timed on a ball that DeJong was trying to win. I know Matt Doyle from MLSsoccer.com was calling it 90-10. I thought it was 70-30. I don't think you can make an argument that it was 50-50. DeJong called it a 50-50 ball after the game. I think 70-30 is fair. I think you could argue 90-10, but I think that's a little bit extreme. I hesitate to throw Alan Chapman under the bus because if you see from the replay, Chapman is trailing the play off almost, I'd say, perpendicular from how Nigel DeJong's shoulders are. So over his right shoulder as he's looking, Nagby's to his right, foot to the right, and in front of him. So I don't know that Chapman got a good angle of it, if at all. I think obviously seeing from the reaction, if nothing else, call it a foul so that Nagbe could get medical attention if it was something serious. So to the people on Twitter who are thinking of throwing Chapman under the bus for not calling it a red card, first of all, this is why we have the MLS Disciplinary Committee, and we already know that DeJong is going to miss it. So unless you're a Timbers fan who's thinking, well, if the red card happens, the Galaxy hasn't scored yet, so maybe we get out with a 1-0 win, I could understand that. But if I'm blaming an official, I'm blaming the fourth official or the official who was on that sideline who clearly had a much better shot of it. In judging intent, I feel like it's really, really hard to sense it, and so much of it is just based on looking at a player's reputation or, you know, their previous history. I see that the ball's out there and that DeJong is going for the ball initially, but then as he comes in, there's a really good picture of it, of DeJong going for it and then looking at the ball and then looking at Nagby's ankle. I don't know how much of that was just a split second sort of a thing, so I really don't know how to judge that. But I guess my question to the angry people on Twitter, Alec, you know, so much of this, Mike Leakey was immediately thrown to the fire with the interview after this. Obviously, with Stu Holden standing to his left, our right on the TV screen, that was super awkward, I think, and I think Stu did a really good job handling it. But you know, if DeJong had tackled some random Denmark player and broken their ankle, same exact play, but it wasn't Stu Holden, it wasn't an American international who's potentially gonna play in two World Cups, would there be as much reaction? And you know, had DeJong done this on a Saturday afternoon instead of Sunday on a nationally televised game to Danny Mwanga instead of Darlington Nagbe, you know, obviously a major star, an MLS Cup champion, and potentially a starter for the U.S. national team in the Copa America, are we making as much hullabaloo out of this? Because I feel like so much of the reaction was based on, yes, I think you have to take reputation and previous egregious tackles and bone breaking into account in this, but was there an overreaction because there was a player who a lot of the fans were familiar with or were fans of in Stu Holden? And was there a huge reaction because this was a major star instead of maybe a bench player? That's my question that I'm posing to the people angry on Twitter. That said, this is three games for me, and I wouldn't give him five. I wouldn't be completely shocked if he got five. I think if you go six or more, I think that's a little harsh, just because I don't know that the MLS Disciplinary Committee has been around long enough for us to have a good sense of precedent as far as what this gets. I don't think even in reviewing plays that a player has gotten more than a retroactive red card. So I don't think anybody's gotten even two games suspended. So I'm really curious to see how they handle this, and I think that could set a precedent for, you know, egregious tackles in the future. Any other comments on that, Alec? Alec, are you there? it seems that maybe we lost Alec Rivera. So in that case, friends, I'm going to move on to our next topic. Jermaine Jones and Didier Drogba will be back in MLS this weekend. Didier Drogba will be playing at Chicago Fire with the Montreal Impact, and then Jermaine Jones will be playing home to New York Red Bulls. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what Drogba does. Obviously, Montreal has been able to get the job done. But I feel like this is, you know, this is their piece where, you know, if they just need to get to a goal or they need to create something, obviously Piatti, Harrison Shipp, any one of their midfield playmakers can go in there and absolutely try and, you know, play something to Drogba, and Drogba is going to be able to score. I think that Drogba might very well eat the Chicago Fire defense alive. Obviously, he's going to be healthy since he's only played in one game and it's all been on grass. So I really like his chances on that. Alec, you're back.
I sure am.
Okay, so Drogba's back. Is Drogba going to eat the Chicago Fire alive this weekend?
That depends on whether or not the Chicago Fire that we've seen the past couple of weeks, which has been a little bit, you know, more threatening, I guess, than previous editions, shows up again. I don't know that that's really who the Chicago Fire are. They haven't proven that they're, you know, a contender in the East yet. But they've definitely taken some steps toward that. So I think that this is more a question of whether the Chicago Fire are for real. They've definitely been improved.
Absolutely. I think the thing that I'm really interested with is, you know, Montreal's obviously had a whole lot of success. You know, they're in the top three in the Eastern Conference. And I think, you know, this was just the piece that they need. So I think maybe where some of, you know, maybe the bench was getting, maybe they were having success, but the bench was getting strained and it was exhausting them a little bit. Now they can pump the brakes a little bit because the big guy's back. And in particular, I think some of the offensive players who've maybe had to create more, now that doesn't need to be as sustainable because they've got their, you know, them, you know, Drogba and Ignacio Piatti are their two biggest weapons. And Piatti's significant. More dangerous when he has a guy like Drogba to find. So now that takes a little bit of pressure off Piatti and a little bit of pressure on the rest of the core because they've got a guy they can play into in Drogba. On the other side of things, the Colorado Rapids midfield is going to get a huge shakeup with the very physical and always entertaining Jermaine Jones this weekend. Alec, do you think that Azira or Cronin comes out? Do you think that the Rapids change formation? And is Jermaine Jones going to eat Dax McCarty alive, whether or not he gets a red card?
You know, I'm actually really looking forward to this match, just to put that out there. I'm intrigued because the Colorado Rapids have also been another team that went from terrible to possibly good this season. So obviously there's questions about formation, there's questions about who's going to play, but I think that Marco Papa is doing work. He's having that midfield organized around him is definitely an asset for the Colorado Rapids, and it makes you wonder if that data that they were talking about, we talked to Podrick Smith about the data they were trying to incorporate into their analysis of players, and I'm starting to wonder if they're reaping benefits of that.
I think they're certainly trying to go for the money ball thing, and we are seeing some success with it. Skelton Gossie gets his first goal of the season, which I think was a huge relief off his shoulders, their big DP acquisition for the season. So certainly I'd be curious to see him start up top. I think Dominic Baggi's done everything but score. He's been an absolute speed demon who's given defenses at least something to think about on that. I agree that Marco Papa can be the playmaker, but I think there's enough pieces around there that, you know, Papa can distribute. I think if it was everything's going through Papa and either Papa creates or you get owned, I think defenses would just cue on him as they would any number 10 on a team where there weren't other threats. But I think the fact that there's other pieces, you know, albeit inexpensive and maybe inexperienced ones for you to think about, you know, Gashi, you know, won the Golden Boot in the Swiss League, for example. I mentioned Baggi, who's pretty fast. You know, even Dylan Powers, who I think is having a quietly underrated season so far as big. And then obviously I personally would I would leave Cronin in defensively, just because I feel like Jermaine Jones can go forward while Cronin could be more of that pure holding mid per se. That's just my own personal preference. I have no idea what the Rapids are going to do as far as the formation. Maybe Jones doesn't start but comes off the bench, but certainly that deep-lying playmaker who can provide a lot of bite and physicality into the midfield is something the Rapids have missed, something that they're going to need. And then Jones is going to fill a vacuum that's going to help them. So I'm really curious to see how that plays, especially with all the moving parts in the midfield for the New York Red Bulls. So on that note, Alec, let's move. We've just got about 5 minutes left. Let's move. I'm just going to give you, I'm going to give you a matchup and you just tell me the score line. Don't give me any maybe a one liner on it. Rapids Red Bulls at Colorado. Who wins and why?
3-1 midfield.
I'm going to say 2-1 to the Rapids, and I'm going to say purely just Jermaine Jones insanity. Seattle Sounders hosting Philadelphia Union.
I'm going to call that a draw, 2-2.
I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw. I think the defense has been better. Obviously, the Union been more workmanlike. Brad Evans and Chad Marshall are getting it done. I know I've been calling it for 3 weeks now. I'm going to call it until I'm right. Jordan Morris gets his first goal as a Sounder. Portland Timbers hosting San Jose Earthquakes.
I'm going to go with the Earthquakes.
Score?
I'm going to say 2-0.
I'm going to go 2-1 on this. I think the Quakes are absolutely feeling it. I think it's close to panic time in Portland after the loss against Dallas. I don't know what they're going to do without Nagby. Valeri will create something, but San Jose is going to muddy it up, and it's going to work. Orlando City, New England Revolution.
I'm pulling for City.
I'm going to go with a 0-0 draw on this one. I think the Revs gutted out a little bit, and I'm not sure how Orlando looks after the loss to the Union last week. And then last match of the week, two teams who both – or no, they did not both win. FC Dallas Sporting Kansas City at FC Dallas.
69-69. I don't know. It's a whole – that one's a toss-up. These are two of the more formidable teams in the Western Conference, and I have no clue. This one, I didn't even put a pick in, and it's the Last Word Soccer Club pick 'em.
I'm gonna say that 2-2 draw, just goals. Just goals.
Just goals.
Yes. Okay. listeners, feel free to follow us and comment on stuff on Twitter at LastWordSC, and then check out obviously the parent site LastWordOnSports.com at LastWordOnSports on Twitter. Feel free to comment or anything. We are always looking for new writers, so feel free to DM me or Alec if you're remotely interested in talking about soccer at any level, MLS, USL, NASL. We do it all. We also have a European department if you're interested in joining that. If you want to be a Euro snob or not and just talk about Everton, that's totally fine too. Anything else I'm missing, Alec?
I think we're good.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us, listeners. This has been another episode of Last Word Soccer Club Radio, presented by LastWordOnSports.com. Have a very good weekend, have a very good night, and don't let the space elephants bite.